Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. It is time for the latest installment in the Pro Wrestling Year in Review series. We stop in April. Join me on this episode, Warren Hayes, for the very first time of Voices of Wrestling and his own podcast as well. Warren and I talk for 2 hours. Yes, 2 hours about April. There was that much stuff. Of course, WrestleMania 40, all the accoutrements that happened, Cody Rhodes finishing his story, and all the, again, the fixins that happen around the Thanksgiving dinner, if you will, that was WrestleMania 40. Of course, there's all types of other stuff that happened that month as well. So we went at least a solid 40 or so minutes on that alone. And then, of course, we had to talk about a former AEW employee or independent contractor, CM Punk, who did a long-form interview with Errol Helwani about AEW, spoke about his time there. And it was a hour-plus conversation that set the wrestling world ablaze for quite some time. And we talk all about that and all kinds of other stuff as well. This is a great episode because there was so much to talk about. So yeah, join me and Warren Hayes right now in Josh Nason's Punch-Out with a stop in April 2024 in the Pro Wrestling Year in Review series. Enjoy. So the Year in Review series rolls on here, and as I always do every single year, I bring on some new guests, some new friends to join us. And you know, sometimes I throw out these invites, and I don't know if they're ever going to get returned. Sometimes they don't, and I'm glad this one did. Yeah, you read him at Voice of Wrestling. Obviously, heard him at Jesse Collins, who just did the March episode. This man has been on his podcast before. He also does some stuff on YouTube. He hosts what he calls the best D-list pro wrestling podcast out there. So I had to get this guy, the one and only Mr. Warren Hayes, for the first time, joins Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Warren, thanks so much for doing this. I finally got you. I'm glad.
Well, I was super excited that you invited me. I was like, hell yeah, let's do it. Like, it didn't even take me any consideration. It was like, more like, yeah, just let's settle on a time, brother. Let's do this. I'm very happy to be here. Seriously, thank you so much for inviting me. This is going to be great.
I'm very excited. So let me ask you, for some people who may have seen the name, you know, float around social media or what have you, may have seen stuff or maybe not kind of fully familiar with who you are and what you do. Why don't you give the kind of the elevator pitch for how you get into this and where people can read you and listen to you and all that.
I started doing podcasting in 2019. I started writing a little before that in 2018 over at Fansided Daily DDT. And then I started podcasting on Fightful. Sean Ross Sapp had put out a tweet one day. He was doing retro reviews behind the paywall back then, back when Fightful Select had, like, you know, 15 members, right? So so he sent out a tweet, said, hey, does anyone want to review? I think it was Great American Bash 1995, something like that. And I DM'd him back and I said, sure. And he writes me back and he says, okay, great. Do you have a microphone? I said, yeah, let's go. And he said, okay, fine. We book a date and I go out and buy myself a microphone. So that's basically what I did for a while, worked for Fightful for a couple of years, and then, decided just to branch out, do stuff on my own, over on my YouTube channel, which is basically where everything happens, at youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes, if I can get the plugs in early. And then started contributing over at, Voices of Wrestling as well, with some, written words there, two tremendous crew of individuals over there with some great minds. So that's the scope of it pretty much these days.
Yeah. And people can't see us on video. You have a very clean office and clean. I'm very jealous of the wood floors and just everything is very, it's the hats are hung up perfectly. It's a very envious of that as I look over my office that my 8-year-old has basically destroyed with all her excess stuff. So gives me some inspiration that there's hope someday.
Well, there, look, I can, my kids are all grown. Like, you know, one of them's moved out. The other one's about to be 17 years old. So okay. if they're running around, you know, leaving their Paw Patrol stuff hanging around or their Lego blocks, then we're going to have a discussion. It's probably going to be a little more serious.
Exactly. And worry about grandkids someday. You never know. Yeah, exactly. Not, of course, not too sad. I don't know how old they are, but yeah.
I'm 50, you know, where I'm, you know, you get to the point where it's like, okay, well, I have to start thinking about this because it could be a possibility because my oldest son lives with his girlfriend. So, you know, every other day, you know, every time the phone rings and I see it's him, I'm like, there's a little something in me that goes, oh boy, this could be the call.
I hear you. I'm knocking on the door 47 in just about a month or so. So I hope I don't get that call anytime soon, or else it's a much bigger problem.
Yeah. Than
that. But I digress. We digress. Let's talk about the month of April. Of course, if you're here for the first time, go through all these different headlines that we've published on the Observer website. And then we kind of boil them down, some of the top stories from each major promotion. And then some of the other things we'll kind of hit on in rapid fire fashion. I'll kick over Warren's or anything that stood out for him that he wants to chat about. But of course, let's lead off with WrestleMania 40. I don't know if they call it still the granddaddy of them all, the old Vince term, but that's where we're at. Of course, this was a big month, and we'll run through basically all the things that happened kind of this weekend. Then we'll chat about. So yeah, Cody Rhodes, of course, finished his story defeating Roman Reigns for the Universal title on night two. He talked about the We Want Cody movement, saying nothing in his career will ever be as touching. I received a special gift from WWE, that being one of his father's old robes, I believe. Or no, sorry, the watch. It was a watch.
It was a watch.
The watch, yes. And there was some question about how this watch would get found, was legitimate, all this stuff. Sounds like it's legitimate. Who knows? It's wrestling. Everyone's working, you know, everyone's working. Of course, night one featured The Rock and Roman Reigns. The Rock's return to action. And Roman Reigns being Cody and Seth Rollins, of course, again, main event night one that led to the stipulation, the bloodline rules for night two, which helped all these old stars kind of get back in the fray and all those things. We'll get to that in a minute. Bayley won the women's championship during WrestleMania weekend. John Cena and The Undertaker helped Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania 40 as there was all types of run-ins and action and just this fever pitch barrage of nostalgia hits one after the other, after the other, after the other. No Steve Austin, unfortunately, but certainly everyone else from the Attitude Era scratching the itch. Undertaker said that Mania 40 provided closure on his wrestling career. He talked about, I believe in March's episode, he talked about he had to talk himself out of making a comeback, as all wrestlers and fighters do. WWE had to refute a report The Rock was 3 hours late for Mania. I was learning that he earned over $9 million in TKO stock for his appearance, which was part of this whole thing in January, as far as him being brought back and all that. Becky Lynch worked the show after being sick all week. The Rock inducted Leah Maivia into the Hall of Fame. Roman Reigns was the person who inducted Paul Heyman. Stephanie McMahon and The Undertaker appeared there. Lil Wayne and Coco Jones made musical appearances during the weekend. Of course, no Steve Austin. It was in Philadelphia, so former NFL lineman Jason Kelsey got involved in a match. Sami Zayn entered Gunther's Intercontinental title reign. They announced this WrestleMania 40 Behind the Curtain documentary, which is going to focus all about the Rollins, Rhodes, Rock, Reigns, this whole thing. It was supposed to be thought it was going to be right away, and it took months and months to come out. A lot of speculation that the Rock needed final cut and wasn't exactly getting to it, but we don't know if that was ever confirmed. Triple H never won to, you know, they always got to pull him out from behind the curtain and get out in front of the pleat, and, you know, get in front of the fans and the adoring public and so on, welcoming fans to the new era. And then Stephanie McMahon, of all people, opening up night two of Mania, later confirmed she was not officially back as an employee or an executive, but just, again, just these very big symbols of Vince isn't here anymore. And some of these people that you like, or we want you to like, are back in front of the camera. Damian Priest cashed in his Money in the Bank briefcase to win the world title over Seth Rollins, of course, that being at night two. Snoop Dogg and Bubba Ray Dudley appeared during a street fight match. Michael Buffer praised Samantha Irvin's performance during the Cody Rhodes title win. Of course, that was a viral moment. Her just kind of getting emotional after he won. Drew McIntyre said that his ring gear was legitimately lost going into the weekend. And he had to actually, there's a lady that works at the crew or what have you. He knew, said she worked all night long to make him something for Mania. Netflix actually aired the show live in New Zealand. New Zealand is a very big, what do you call it? A big tech hub in terms of testing things out. It's a very tech savvy country and they like to test things out there. So of course, well in advance of the actual Netflix deal, but they want to kind of see how things went. And yeah, so that was notable. AJ Styles and LA Knight, an angle took place at Mania 40 Media Day. There's Becky Lynch and Rhea Ripley at a confrontation angle took place on Errol Helwani's MMA Hour. I include these because now you're starting to see more of an expansion in terms of like, and not just media appearances, but now it's what can we do for angles during these media appearances at places you wouldn't expect. So I think that's going to be a trend. And then Jey Uso said he felt that he and Jimmy let people down with their Mania 40 match, which is pretty roundly panned. And let's end it there with Mania 40. It's a lot. I guess your overall, you know, your thoughts as we sit here more than 6 months after Mania 40 and kind of your thoughts and how things have gone since then.
Oh, golly. That's a pretty big picture there. I think that I think WWE did a very good job in planting the flag to make sure that everyone saw that Vince McMahon is no longer here, right? Just to me, that was ultimately the tale here, with Cody, of course, winning at the end, and you know, a denouement that, oh, we could still argue what is a year too late, but you know, that's a whole other podcast, if you ask me. You know, with him winning, I think it was important because it was extremely important that it was Cody who won. You know, it's not Roman still holding the title. It's not Brock. You know, it's not Vince guys who are holding the title anymore. This is Cody. He's, yeah, sure, he came in under Vince, but he never was labeled as a Vince guy. He always felt like, you know, he came in and he still felt like an outsider, a guy who wasn't constructed by Vince. He wasn't built by Vince. He had to leave the company to become something, because his career in Vince's hands had him wearing face paint and, you know, doing a tag and then wearing a thin mustache and calling himself handsome, right? That was under Vince. So he had to go elsewhere to build himself up and then come back, as Cody liked to say, as undeniable, right? He had been telling this, he'd been telling us for years that he was on, you know, that this was his plan. We didn't realize exactly what he meant until then. And he comes back. I think I've said that 9 times now, but now he comes back and he's a guy who is definitely not a Vince project. Vince might have been really excited to bring him back and decided to give him the full superstar entrance and whatnot, and book him as a superstar as well. And I mean superstar in the Oxford Dictionary sense as opposed to the WWE sense. So it really is the WrestleMania that indicated the changing of the guard, and creatively speaking, Triple H being coming out to make sure that everyone understood that it was him who was behind this. This was his first Mania, a non-Vince guy winning the championship and being the top guy of the company. I mean, these are all significant markers that established the company, and you know, We're still trending in that direction for now. And I think overall the show was successful amongst the fan base, and that's what you want most. And the fan base is very large these days. So WWE has absolutely been reaping the rewards of some very good creative that is responding well to the people that are excited about it. So And it's still carrying them today. Like this, you know, the momentum that WWE has right now is undeniable. They're it's a hot product. It's a hot ticket. They're revving up to go for a big European tour next year. Like, you know, things are going tremendously well for WWE. And I think this is momentum that will carry them for a couple of years still.
Oh yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's it's kind of one of those things where we'll never know what would have happened if Cody had won at 39, right? And that was the thing, again, you try never to be surprised, but I remember sitting there being like, I can't believe they didn't have him win. I still remember that feeling because I wrote the post to the website, and I was just like, this just, like, what happened? Like, it just does, like, something happened. This happened. Of course, and afterwards, like, oh, it's a longer story, and then this whole, like, bloodline, so many innings. And I think, I've said this on the show before, I think the innings thing, it reminds me very similar of in a loose relation to the AEW four pillars thing. But I think when you put such a definite, like, these are going to be the four guys, it puts undue pressure on them. And then it says, what about it? Almost like subconsciously says, okay, does anyone else not important? And I think when you say that, you know, that the nine innings of the bloodline, it's kind of like, well, is this, what are we considering an inning? Like, and you start to think, okay, if you start to get a little bit of lag, storyline lag, you're like, okay, do we have, is half the game left? You know, like, I think sometimes that saying it puts a timeline on it, because innings are like a timeline in a sense in sports. So I think this, I they certainly would have been as successful completely if 39, if Rhodes had won. I have no doubt about it, because he was white hot then. He was hot a year later. And I think what did happen with the inclusion of The Rock, and this probably would have happened regardless in terms of headlines, in terms of news value, with this whole, as we're talking about the show, from when he came back to the head of the table comment on Raw to, like, being inserted, the whole Super Bowl weekend thing when Cody declared, and was like, what is going on here? Who is going to be in the main event? Who knew what? What changed what? It certainly added more intrigue for people like us, who like to see the full picture, sure, and kind of understand that. So I don't, things ended up working out okay. I certainly don't think this was their whole plan, but in the end, I think it was going to be impossible for them not to be okay unless Vince was fully back in charge, you know?
I agree. And you know, just to come back around on this, you know, you sort of mentioned it here, Cody not winning at 39. We almost didn't get it at 40 because they were setting up Roman and Rock and Cody and Seth. And it's essentially the public outcry that we want Cody stuff that turned the tides, because they completely retconned that. They tried their best to go, oh no, this was the plan all along. And I was like, no, it and it's fine. It's fine if this was not your plan and you decided to change, because you know what? That's what pro wrestling should be. That's how it's looked at. You've been watching pro wrestling for years. So have I. You know, we remember a time where, you know, people don't get reactions. Well, you know, they get tossed up the top of the card and you put someone else in, right? So it's absolutely fine. And in fact, I'd actually appreciate it a lot more if they had just come out and said, yeah, we were thinking about going in another direction, but seeing the upswell of support for Cody here, we decided that we're going to try something else. Wouldn't make anyone look terrible. Au contraire, it doesn't make your creative look awful. It makes you look responsive. It makes you look malleable. It makes you look like adaptable to the reality of what's going on in your company, when we've just spent years with Vince at the helm, you know, with this singular vision, and we will not budge from this, you know, regardless. Like, it took major, like, swings for Vince to change his mind. Becky Lynch, you know, we can go back a few more years with Daniel Bryan, right? Yeah. It takes major shifts for Vince to pivot. Kofi Mania, you know, but, you know, Zack Ryder, you know, that was never a thing, you know, and Roman Reigns is the top guy, whether you like it or not. And he's a babyface, whether you like it or not. Like, it's always something that I've thought of as this. If this is indeed the new era and you want to do things differently and you want to show that Triple H is doing things differently, Paul Levesque, Paul could, you know, grab a microphone. I know he hates to be in front of a camera, but he could grab a microphone, get in front of a camera and say, yeah, you know what? We're changing directions here. We decided to change directions because of the outcry. And that would be a a real deal change. This would be like, oh, this would be significant. That's something that you could point at and say, this is more than you just talking. This is more than just talk. You're actually doing it. I think that would have been interesting.
Yeah. Wrestling's at its best when it's organic and it feels organic. And that's always the best. So The Rock also said there might be more matches for him in the future. I think we're pretty much sure that's going to happen. We don't know where. Mentioned it, Cody Rhodes the night after the Raw after WrestleMania, saying our story has just begun. And later, after this, actually before this, I don't actually what this quote is from, is in the same time frame. My sights are set on the next WrestleMania. So we'll kind of see what happens there. Obviously, the assumption is it's Cody and Rock at some point. Of course, a lot of people, the assumption is they're going to run that Roman Reigns-Rock match at some point in terms of the bloodline. That feels to be the final inning, I guess, going back to that. Well, they have options, and we'll kind of see what happens. If Rock was going to be back more often, I mean, you could do stories, you could do a Punk storyline if you want to, but all this. But I think this seems to be, if we're only going to get a couple matches left, a Cena match during Cena's retirement seems obvious to me. I mean, that would be something big. They're going to have some sort of, they're going to blow it up next year for no doubt. They're going to try and make that big. But the ones that make most logical sense, you know, story-wise, are to finish the story with Cody, and then, you know, if Reigns is going to be it, then Reigns is going to be it. But something with that whole bloodline thing, I think kind of wrap that up seems to be the right thing. But who knows how much time we have, you know?
I mean, that's it. WWE fans have been wanting Roman versus Rock for, it feels like 6 years at this point. You know, it's something that they've been clamoring for every WrestleMania. You get every time January comes along, you start getting little reports and little, we've heard that The Rock might be on, or then it's like, no, The Rock doesn't seem to be interested or whatever. Every January, it's clockwork. So, you know, everyone thought of, well, not everyone, but a lot of people thought it was going to happen last year, but also people wanted Cody to finish the story because it was the natural progression. That's now, right. Let's say, like you said, let's say we get at WrestleMania, let's say we get Rock versus Cena, which I think would make perfect sense. You know, like I think it would be the aura match, right? It's like Hogan and Rock, right? It'd be one of those, right? And you know, Dwayne would want to be in that spot. He would love to be in that moment again, where he can just stand across from John Cena in the ring and have the audience going bananas again, like he did with Hogan. Mm-hmm. He'd love that. But then do you push back Roman versus The Rock again? Because you know Dwayne's not working Boise, Idaho, right? he's not flying to Australia to headline a show with Roman Reigns. He wants to do WrestleMania with Roman. Like, so it's an interesting conundrum when you start seeing how the pieces are all coming together here. What are they going to pull off this year? And ultimately the question is are they going to delay it again? Are they going to delay Rock and Roman one more year? And can WWE fans handle it?
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see what happens there. So there's a lot of WWE stuff here. I'm going to split them into three chunks. I'll kick it over to you after this first one if there's anything here that stands out. Artist Rob Schamberger, no longer with WWE. Those remember have seen his artwork there for 15 years or something. It could be longer, should be shorter, but seeing as he's been there for a long time, no longer affiliated with them. Bronson Reed won the Andre the Giant Battle Royal leading into Mania. Rhea Ripley had to vacate the Women's World title following an injury, and Becky Lynch ended up winning it. And of all things, a battle royal, as everyone, all top champions are made. And then her memoir that was released made the New York Times bestsellers list. Seth Rollins, her husband, underwent knee surgery. He would be out for quite some time. Was able to gut through WrestleMania, but taking some time off. Big E shared his 2-year broken neck update. Still not clear. Decision on whether to make his in-ring return is up to him. Of course, we're recording this on a Monday, December 2nd. So I don't know. Who knows what could happen tonight? He's coming back as far as the whole New Day thing. So if you're wondering, oh yeah, if he's come, if something happens with Big E tonight, just know this was recorded before Raw. Cameron Grimes released from his WWE contract and was told, your real story, he was told the prior week he didn't need to worry about losing his job, which you never want to believe the bosses. When that happens, he seemed genuinely heartbroken about that. And I think, we talk about this in a minute, but I think his comments about really wanting to, that WWE was his dream. I wonder, the way he talked about this, I wonder if it hurt his potential getting hired by AEW just because of this concern about if you're signing people that all they want to do is go back, then kind of where's their heart type thing. So we can talk about that in a minute. Carmella Hayes, Counter James, and Baron Corbin were called up from NXT in the WWE draft. Cody Rhodes, you've had lines of him, landed a role in the film reboot of The Naked Gun, which I hope, I'm so sad to hear is rebooting the movie because the movies are perfect as is. You know, OJ and all, you know, it just kind of makes it, they're just so great. And I don't know why.
Little sidebar. This is the kind of thing where I wonder who wants this, who's been sitting around saying, boy, I really wish the Naked Gun films were like made, were redone today, because they're so funny and they still hold up. I watch them every other month. I watch the first film every other month and it's still funny. Yeah, okay, OJ's in it, but he's also not a significant role in it. Liam Neeson is just spectacular in it. Priscilla Presley is so, wonderfully dumb in it. Like, it's just, I don't know. I don't understand it. I really don't.
He said he disagreed with CM Punk's assessment of Tony Khan and AEW. We'll get to that in just a minute in the AEW section. Filed the trademark for the Renaissance era. I don't think that caught on at all. What did catch on was his tour bus on fire, that is. And he said everyone was safe after that happened. So that was leading up to WrestleMania. Signed a deal with Logan Paul's Prime. Saying we're going to try his best to bring back the Winged Eagle WWE title from the 1980s. That has not happened, but that's one of the things to kind of really get yourself over with our generation, I guess. And then also announced his first title offense is going to be at AJ Styles at Backlash. Cruz del Toro underwent surgery. Dominic Mysterio out of action with injury. Initially, he was thinking about getting surgery, I think possibly Tommy John surgery, of all things, and decided he was going to work against it or not go for it. Valhalla and Eric announced they were expecting their second child, which actually was just born, I think, a couple days ago as we record this. Ricochet won the inaugural Speed title. WWE, for some reason, decided to split the Raw and SmackDown tag team titles. The unified title, we love these unified titles, but then they split them up because we need more titles. New champions are crowned. Workers here, A-Town Down won the SmackDown titles. And an awesome Truth won the Raw titles. The company revealed the location for Clash at the Castle, Glasgow, Scotland. Announced that the Royal Rumble generated $47 million in economic impact for St. Petersburg, Florida. And then Las Vegas all of a sudden was rumored to be in the running as a potential host city for WrestleMania 41. Thoughts on any of that?
Wow, there's a lot of stuff here. Let's touch on the Cameron Grimes stuff because you brought it up and I'm in complete agreement with you. I think he may have been a little too, he may have played his hand a little too much, ultimately being brokenhearted about losing his WWE job because here's the thing is like, I don't have a problem with him, like personally as a human going on Twitter and posting about how sad he is. Like, he was in tears. He was absolutely broken up about it. But at some point you do have to sort of, you got to keep some cards close to your chest at the same time. So I can understand you're emotional, you're doing a thing, but yeah, if I'm Tony Khan, it's like, oh yeah, Cameron Grimes, good little wrestler, but if this is his dream to be in WWE and he's on the internet bawling about it, well, no, I'm not gonna bring him in to prop him up so that he jumps right back the minute Paul Levesque gives him a call again. It's like I completely understand that. Why, Tony's business is not creating WWE stars, it's creating AEW stars, so I can understand that. Lots of injuries after WrestleMania this year. We talked about Rhea, Seth, but there were quite a few injuries. They're all sort of slipping my mind, but I talked about them on my podcast. And I was a little surprised at how many people just needed some time off after, which made me wonder, how many people got hurt at the show? How many people were working hurt on the show? If there's one thing WWE has been particularly good at is for a while, for about a year now, it's keeping backstage stuff very, very tight-lipped. There's only a very select number of people who can get information out of WWE now. You can literally count them on one hand, I believe. Other than that, so it's, other than that, the what I'm trying to say is that there were a lot of people. I think there were some people going into Mania. I think we knew about Seth going into Mania being his status being iffy, but I think there was probably a little more folks that had some nagging injuries or some stuff that either got aggravated or they knew they were going to have some time off after Mania to take care of it, and everything was on the down low. So, I mean, after post Mania is a good time to take some time off as well, right?
I
And
agree.
if you need to do that, yeah, I mean, and Cody, well, the Renaissance era, right? There's a lot of people who made a pitch for that. I saw that going around a lot, calling it the Renaissance era. I wasn't a fan of it, and the reason why is because historically the Renaissance was that era was in human history was called that because we were coming out of a period called the Dark Ages. We were trying to show that humanity is, we can elevate ourselves, that there's enlightenment that can happen, so on and so forth, and basically rejecting the precepts of the Middle Ages, essentially, right? So I was like, well, they can call it the Renaissance era if they like, but isn't that just an admission that what was happening before was kind of the Dark Ages of the company? It wouldn't, like, I thought it was funny, but I didn't think it was necessarily a good idea to throw your weight behind.
And they certainly didn't. Nothing really ever came of it.
No, nothing came out of that. Cody having his first defenses lined up against AJ Styles was a good idea too. I know the didn't happen specifically in April, right? I think the first one was in May. And he had two defenses against Styles, and I liked them both. I thought they were very, very good, well worked, really well worked matches. I thought one of them was really great that I really, really liked. I don't remember which one specifically, but I think it was a great showing. It was a great idea. And then AJ Styles now looking like Randy Savage now is tremendous at the same time.
That's a whole other podcast right there.
Yeah.
Let's go to some other stuff. Another big chunk here. Vince McMahon, of course, the fallout from the Janelle Grant lawsuit coming out in January. One of his legal people saying that Janelle Grant was coerced, or sorry, Janelle Grant's lawyer said she was coerced into writing a 2021 love letter to Vince McMahon, which is, I believe, is an email, but it's strange to hear a love letter in 2024, but here we are. His trainer posted a statement on Vince McMahon being unable to attend WrestleMania. There'd be no wrestling or WrestleMania without Vince. Of course, very very pro Vince, no big surprise there. He continued his stock sales, selling more than $300 worth of his Endeavor and TKO stock and listing all his remaining TKO shares for sale as of today. I think he still owns a little over 8 million shares. So he still is a 5% owner of Class A or Class B, which means they have to report on the ownership of that, which is some SEC type stuff. But he's still not part of the company, as far as they've said. He filed a motion to compel arbitration, Janelle Grant lawsuit. Her team filed a motion to strike his preliminary statement. And he was said to have moved on following his resignation from WWE. Corey Graves said he rekindled his friendship with CM Punk since his return. Ronda Rousey in the news said she would not go back to WWE unless things drastically change. Hopes Vince McMahon is completely gone from WWE. And then Drew Gulak's name came into it. And she, in an interview, I think this is leading up to her book tour, I believe, accused Drew Gulak of pulling on her sweatpants, the string on her sweatpants during a backstage, kind of just walking by and said that she pulled her sweatpants. She did not like that, of course, and who would? Gulak said that the incident was a complete accident, and WWE investigated Ronda Rousey's claim about Drew Gulak, and we'll get to more about him in just a few minutes. But yeah, that was not a good situation there, and up really as much as essentially pretending his end with the company, and you know, Triple H saying his contract ran out. However, I think, you know, smart people can assume that there was a he was going to be gone no matter what. No coming back from that, even if she wasn't with the company. NFL star Patrick Mahomes made his Raw appearance, or made a debut, I guess, alongside Logan Paul. This really lean into getting big superstar athletes involved, even physically involved in some of the action, and so on and so forth. WWE draft, again, I mentioned that earlier, but Stephanie McMahon and Braun Strowman appeared on the night two of the draft. Ilya Dragunov, Dijak, Lyra Valkyria, among us, other NXT stars called up. Roman Reigns withdrew his eligibility. When you're a big star like that, you can just say, I'm not going to get drafted by either side. I can do what I want, the Brock rule. And then they did a report. Jimmy Uso was injured and out of the draft pool as well. He would miss a few months of action. The company laid off their longest tenure employee after 38 years, Sue Aitchison, who was involved in community relations a lot and was just long. And that was kind of, as we've seen, the slow drip over the past couple of years post TKO, or really since, you know, the September before, the slow drip in terms of releases and things like that. And then you see some of these it's kind of, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just kind of tough to see. You know, I don't know any of these people get let go, but still, you know, a woman that was very involved in community relations and all these things, kind of a family company. These are realities in mergers and acquisitions and so on. Drew McIntyre ended up re-signing with WWE, a 3-year deal. There's a lot of you know, talk about whether he would leave, but I think most people kind of assumed he would stay and stuck around and ended up having probably one of the, you know, the biggest angles and storylines of his career coming up with CM Punk. Scripps announced he was going to be departing WWE when his contract was set to expire in June. I don't think anyone really thought much of this at the time, but now he is doing things in GCW and really making a name for himself. And I think really opened people's eyes that he was not just what he's people saw in NXT and all that. And there's a lot more to him. And yeah, it all started here. EVP of talent, Dan Vandrell, no longer with the company. Milwaukee said they were hoping to host a future Royal Rumble event. The company announced C4 as their first ever energy drink partner. And Sami Zayn set to present a comedy show during the Netflix as a Joke Festival. They say he was going to try to dip his toes into outside WWE projects a little bit. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, to start off with, I'm sorry. WWE announcing C4 as their first ever energy drink partner. That's 5-hour energy erasure, man. I'm sorry. That now someone has to stand up for this. What there's no one interested in wrestling history anymore, I tell you. Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't think we cannot not mention the Janelle Grant stuff as it keeps moving forward. You know, Vince, well, at least Vince's side, right? His legal team put out the, you know, the love letter. Like you said, it's always a little weird, you know, saying that, put out the love letter as kind of a smoking gun kind of thing, right? That was the thing. It was like, aha, but she says she loves me, and then Grant's side says, yeah, but you know, she was sort of coerced into doing it, and they shared the exchanges where you don't actually, I like, in fairness, you don't really see like Vince saying do this or else kind of thing, but you know, she's writing, and it's not the entire messages that have been released as well. Like there's probably logs and logs and logs that we haven't seen. So, but you do see her saying stuff to the effect of, I know it's taking me a long time and I'm sorry, you know, I just, you know, and she's trying to soften it by saying, I just want to do good by you, you know, and all of that stuff. I think she calls him baby, which is so weird. I don't want to hear anyone call Vince McMahon baby. Like that's the kind of stuff I really don't need in my life.
Yeah.
The whole thing is a complete, it's still a, let's say not a complete, it's not a mess. What's the word I'm looking for? It's
shit a, show?
yeah, I get, you know, particularly for Vince, you know.
Yeah.
But you have to wonder now with all the changes happening, you know, and on the on y'all's side of the border with the government and the new appointees that President Trump is setting in. You kind of get the impression that Vince is going to weasel his way out of this one as
Yeah,
well,
pretty
you know.
much. Yeah.
I think that's the reasonable expectation at this point. It's not the best expectation, and it's kind of bad and it's awful, but you do feel that it's going to go his way, ultimately. I don't think that anything's going to be pursued. Sucks for Dominik Dijak. You
Yeah.
know, it's like, you know, we you talk about the Cameron Grimes thing, you know, where he's 1 week before, he's like, yeah, don't worry, your job is fine. Well, Dijak gets called up to Raw and he's like, you know, he's rubbing his hands together. He's going, all right, T-Bar is dead. Let's go.
Yep.
Next thing you know, poof, hit the bricks, pal.
Yeah.
You know, and if anything, you know, the comparison you made with Scripps is interesting because I find Scripps is doing a better job putting himself out there and having interesting matches and rebuilding, I guess, in a sense, or building, period, in his case, because he just came in out of straight out of Cirque du Soleil and just went right to WWE. Whereas I think Dijak's been floundering a little. I think he hasn't been I don't think he's been all that tremendous. He hasn't been setting the world on fire, where I think Reggie Scripps, I hate the name Scripps. That's why I feel like, but I can't remember like his shoot name or his indie name that he's using. I just can't remember it. But he's I think maybe it's a question of expectations ultimately. He's gaining a lot more attention because I don't think anyone had any expectations and they're like, oh, okay, this guy is ready to go. Whereas Dijak, I think your expectations are a little higher since he's come from that environment. You'd think that he'd be well adjusted to hit the indies again, but I don't know. It's not clicking for me. It's
Yeah.
not. It's not. He's not doing it.
So Sidney Akeem is
Sidney Akeem.
Scripps. Yeah, I just looked that up. Yeah, with Dijak, I'll actually disagree in that. I've seen him in our loop here in the Northeast, and he's working regularly, and he's worked with the good benefit of being in the Northeast United States is there's from Maine through Newark, Mid-Atlantic area, there's no shortage of places to work that are putting on stuff. So he is super active. I think one of the things that happened with him is there's AEW's roster, and if you might have heard, is really full. They have a lot of big guys as is. And I think with WWE, it just, and he talked about this. He talked about his he when he actually got this call up, it wasn't shown on TV. It was shown on Twitter or social media, and he immediately started getting this weird feeling of like, it doesn't feel like it's going to be made a big deal if it's not on actual TV. And he said, I should have just kind of started thinking more about that and all this stuff. So I think he and so many people that have been released and are going to get released, it's kind of like, where are people looking for big men still? Do they have spots? And this is kind of where the TNAs and the MLWs to extend, and that's, they are beneficial in that they will take some of these guys and give them, and girls will give them work. Whereas AEW, it's harder to get in, especially if you want to stay active. So many of these people get signed and we look 6 months down the road and they've worked like three times. It's just it's hard. So yeah, it's interesting. But with Sidney Akeem, I think in a much different way, he is definitely someone that has elevated his stock from someone that thought he was that just they basically just forgotten about him, thought he was a joke. So yeah, it's interesting when people get out where they choose to take their career, what choices and chances. I think Sidney Akeem definitely reinvented himself completely, where say Dijak or even other people that have been released, the other day we were talking about Elias. How much you want to reinvent yourself to make people take notice and say, oh wow, this isn't what we thought at all. It's a challenge, it really is.
I agree. And to be clear, I wasn't necessarily talking about the amount of work that he does, like the because I do know he's active. I was talking a little more about the output, the
Sure.
quality.
Yeah.
You know, it's
Yeah.
that's mostly what I that that's why I said that that's why I felt like Akeem was was much more surprising, and people were maybe talking a little more about his work because everyone was kind of surprised about what's kind of surprised of what he was able to do, as opposed to Dijak, where I feel his he's very active. Don't get me wrong. That wasn't what I was trying to say. And I completely misspoke, not misspoke, but I didn't explain myself well. It's more on the output where I'm sort of like, I'm very kind of, okay, well, his work is very ordinary, where I felt like now that he's sort of, re-energized, he just charge in and maybe have people who have very bloated rosters with a lot of big guys go, hey, I need to add one more big guy because this guy is tremendous.
Yeah, it's reinvention and a lot of the sure. Is it the same? Yeah, to your point, yeah, there's not much of a different character between what we just saw for so long and what he's out there now, where the City of Keems and others have certainly changed up. Yeah, I would agree with that. Let's go to some of the other things in the month. We'll wrap up WWE end of things. A busy month for them, as you might be able to tell. Nick Khan addressed the Vince McMahon allegations for the first time. Also talked about future WrestleMania changes. Reportedly interested in the company working with our wrestling promotions, which we knew would happen. Also attended Bloodsport. Some people excited by these things, other people definitely not excited by these things, and you can imagine why. Give a update on the company's plans for international PLEs. Obviously, that's a big strategy for them, and they really have taken what started. I don't know if it started in Puerto Rico with that backlash in 23. That crowd was just absolutely rabid, and they've kind of like now it's this. Now every fan base in these other countries think they have to match that. And so it's just this like an old Plinko board on Price is Right, right? They just get like we had to do the same thing, And it's worked out. Just everything just works out so well for them right now. And Nick Khan said that future WrestleManias won't go against the NCAA Final Four, which a huge thing obviously here in the U.S. And it just makes a lot of sense that from a sports competition or a viewing competition standpoint, you're not going to go against. You're going to try to avoid that completely. And that's what they're going to do. They are going up against Easter this year, which would be a good, Cody Rhodes versus the Easter Bunny, those type of things. So we'll see what happens there. Triple H said WWE is up against ourselves for competition. Always gets the hardcore AEW fans all riled up, which is always good for clicks, right? Said he was totally good with being retired from in-ring competition. I would hope so, considering the issues with his heart and he should never wrestle again. I hope that he's good, and I don't expect we'll see him anytime again. Even that Saudi money, if they want to have him and Sean wrestle again, hopefully they'll say no. He responded to the London mayor wanting to host WrestleMania, saying, let's talk, and they eventually did. We'll get to that later in the series. I asked about Brock Lesnar's status. It's the same as it's been before. And, not really delving into too much there as far as his mentions in the Janelle Grant lawsuit. The company held their Slammy Awards during Mania weekend. Report came out that Jacob Fatu was telling people he had signed with WWE. That report turned out to be true. Saudi Arabia was announced to be hosting both a SmackDown and a brand new PLE on back-to-back nights, that being King and Queen of the Ring in May. Jesse Ventura, I mean, this shows how hot WWE is. Jesse Ventura coming back around said they are talking again. They would have some things to announce in May. John Cena revealed what he told Cody Rhodes in the ring after his WrestleMania 40 win. Basically, it was related to asked about how heavy the title belt is, and it's just going to get heavier and heavier. A very John Cena thing to say about being the champ and the weight it puts on you and all that. Saying at that point, he hoped to return to the company for one last run after Christmas. We'd learn more about that later on. And he also appeared on Raw teaming with the Awesome Truth on the Raw after WrestleMania. Logan Paul and his fiance expecting their first child. A screen glitch message, hello, aired during WWE Raw. Of course, that would portend the eventual arrival of the Wyatt Six. Damian Priest signed a new contract. Tama Tonga made his debut on SmackDown. Of course, entering the Bloodline. Sheamus set to make his return after a long time off. Piper Niven returned. Eric Rowan canceled an indie date due to new contractual commitments, which would be the Wyatt Six. Damian Priest versus Jey Uso title match official for Backlash. WWE did release some talent. Jinder Mahal, Zion Lee, Zion Quinn, and Von Wagner, among some of those releases. Finn Balor expected to sign a long-term deal, which he eventually did. Ludwig Kaiser turned against Giovanni Vinci on Raw, which many assume at some point will result in Vinci probably being released at some point just because the numbers game. And a new faction was believed to be forming, which eventually did, which was the Creeds and Chad Gable. Thoughts about any of that?
I'm really glad that Triple H thinks that their competition is only up against themselves, right? That's
Yes.
tremendous. Maybe they'll start counter programming themselves too. Hey, who knows? You know, maybe they'll start running shows the same day down the street. Sure.
That'd be great.
Hey, you know, it's but didn't it Khan say, was it last year he said that our only competition is sleep, right? Well, didn't he say
Yes.
something to that effect on
Yes, he
on
did.
a call? Yeah, right.
Yep.
So look, they're competing like two big competitors, sleep and themselves. I'm a big New Japan watcher. I watch a lot of stuff from New Japan. So I was very happy that Tama Tonga got himself a WWE deal. Well, yeah, you're laughing, but yeah, look, to be honest, I'm very happy that because in the territory days, someone would just they'd do everything they have to do and then they'd move on, right? And it was legitimately Tama Tonga's time to move on. I think he should have moved on maybe a year, 18 months, 2 years ago. He like there was a ceiling there for him, and they tried to give him the singles run, give him some singles titles and whatnot. But there just comes a time where it's like, all right, it's Tama Tonga again. And I'm just glad that he has his change of scenery, because regardless of how tiresome, I guess, the Tongans had become in New Japan towards the end, he has always been a super hard worker. He's always been a guy who has been reliable, loyal. He's been he and for a long stretch of time, a terrific wrestler too, right? And even today, he can still go, right? I'm mostly happy he decided to leave and bring his brother with him. That's him leaving New Japan is one thing, but Tongaloa leaving, as a thank you very much, Tama, for giving your brother a job. That's tremendous. Yeah, Jesse Ventura getting. Do you think it's Vince is gone, so I might be open to talk now? You think there's a little bit of
I mean, maybe he'll start talking about unions in the dressing room. You never know.
that? There's no one's around to snitch anymore, I don't think, right?
That's true.
Everyone will be pro union now, right?
That's true. Cody will be right at the front of the line. He'll be the one to
Yeah,
sign
exactly.
that card, sign that union card.
There you go. No, I mean, yeah, Jacob Fatu, man, what a signing too, right? There's a guy that the WWE fans have just immediately latched on to. I don't think anyone was really surprised. He has a truckload of charisma, and I'm sure some people got a little worried when they had him stand up next to Solo Sikoa and he was completely overshadowing him, just by his pure presence, at least in my view. But he's going to be, sometimes I wonder what they're going to do with all these bloodline hires once eventually the angle sort of fizzles out. It eventually will have to, regardless of what inning you're in, it will
Right.
eventually have to dissipate. But Jacob's not a guy I'm worried about. I think he's going to be fine in this company.
Oh,
I
yeah.
think he's going to be very, very fine.
I would agree. Let's go through NXT real quick before we flip, get away from Titan Towers. Ivar in the Final Testament appeared on an episode of NXT. Drew Gulak, we mentioned, removed from the No Quarter Catch Cruise
I'm
entrance.
sorry. I'm sorry. He was killed.
Oh, that's right. That's
He
right.
wasn't removed. He was
Yeah.
murdered.
That's right. In a very TNA move, because they try to murder people on screen all the time. And then they just come back. It's very strange how that happens. Yeah. That must be, I guess that's what we should have known with murder on screen. They probably got that in the early stages of the TNA talks. Like, use this idea for free. This one's on us. We'll talk later in the year.
Exactly. It's part of the exchange.
Exactly. Axiom and Nathan Frazer won the NXT tag team titles. Lexus King announced to appear for Booker T's Reality of Wrestling, kind of part of this slow burn into doing more stuff out and about with their guys working other indie shows. NXT Battleground announced to be held in Las Vegas at the UFC Apex, the first wrestling show to happen there. And they were going to have fans, which of course while the UFC fans were wondering, well, why can't UFC fans are allowed to go to these shows at the Apex? So the NXT, there was a lot of talk in both worlds about this show coming up in, I believe it was May or June. Joe Gacy, an injury scare on TV, forced some changes to one of their episodes. Javon Evans, super high prospect, set to make his NXT debut. Roxanne Perez won the women's title Stand and Deliver during Mania weekend. Julia made her first appearance on WWE on screen at Stand and Deliver. Wes Lee made his return and confronted Obafemi at Spring Breakin'. Trick Williams won the NXT title at Spring Breakin' as well, and the company announced they were going to crown their first ever women's North American champion at the aforementioned Battleground. Thoughts about any of that?
I think Axiom and Nathan Frazier might be my favorite tag team of the year. I think they've been remarkable, just fantastic matches. Every time I saw them on the NXT pay-per-views, PLEs, whatever, they've been highlights for me on those shows. I otherwise kind of struggle to put together like a list of tag teams where I'm like, okay, well, who are the really hot tag teams that I thought were really, really good and exciting this year? And I find like tag team wrestling this year has been a little miserable. I don't think it's been all that exciting. The company that promised us that tag team wrestling could main event shows has been, I think, has had a laughable stretch when it comes to their tag team wrestling. And it's weird that I'm turning to, well, not weird that I'm turning to NXT to be like, yeah, these two guys are tremendous. It's not that weird because A-Kid and Nathan Frazier are both accomplished, really great high level pro wrestlers, and they've had great dance partners. Their tag team matches against Chase U were phenomenal stuff. They've been a standout. They're absolutely one of my favorite tag teams that I've seen this year.
Yeah.
I think I'd have to go like to CMLL. I'd have to go like to, like Magnus and Rugido to find like another tag team where I'd be like, yeah, these guys are always a blast to watch and I really like them. You know, there's no one else, Josh. Like, there's no one else that gets the blood pumping. They're like, okay, this was actually a great match.
It is wild that Nathan Frazier worked for AEW during the pandemic. He had like three or so standout matches. And then it was just done. And eventually he gets signed. And it's kind of one of those things like it's one of those ones that kind of is head scratching me. Like, why? Maybe they made him. I don't know if they made him an offer. He turned it down or they just weren't interested. Or that's one of those ones that it's interesting when some of those people that have worked there get away and they become bigger names or become like, wow, really standouts. And it's like, well,
right.
He was just in your ring, you know, and not that doesn't happen, you know, every time during the pandemic when they brought some people in, but I'm surprised with him because he seemed to fit right in with what they were trying to do at that point. But I guess, you know, it's not.
Yeah. Like, I mean, things were so up in the air at that point. Right. And you're AEW, like you're struggling. You're doing everything to keep your shows on the air and whatnot. You know, you don't have you don't have the media money. You know, so you do have some choices to make. What if WWE approaches you, sees you on the dark matches, right?
Yeah.
Ben Collins was his name, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes, it sounds about right. Yeah.
And they go up to him and say, Ben, you know, you could come work at our warehouse and we'll give you a steady salary.
Yeah.
No, well, I mean, and you're from the UK, you know, like at the same time, you know, you're like, this is all new to you, all this United States stuff. You know, like if I were in his shoes and let's say that hypothetical situation did indeed happen, I'm not sure I wouldn't accept that offer too, you know, where I'm like, I'm young. I just came over here. Now I'm shut down because of the pandemic. I'm doing great over here with these guys, but the big guys are offering me money, stable money. Whereas maybe Tony's not off me, you know, maybe he's got me on one of these tiered deals where I'll pay you when you come in kind of thing. I'll go with the secure money.
Yeah. You know? So it's Ben Carter. Close. Ben Carter. Ben Carter. So he wrestled three matches against Ricky Starks, And that guy could be joining him again soon. Against Lee Johnson and then Scorpio Sky. And it was two dark matches and then a late night dynamite in September 2020.
And the Lee Johnson match was tremendous. The Lee
Yes.
Johnson match was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, how about that? All right. Well, my sleeves are already rolled up. I'm going to roll them up more because we're going to get into this right here. We're going to flip to AEW slash Ring of Honor, and we got to lead off with this. CM Punk, this whole CM Punk Tony Khan footage section. CM Punk did a long form interview leading up to WrestleMania with Ariel Helwani on his show. They've talked before several times and saying AEW is not a real business. And of course, he discussed Tony Khan's leadership and so on. And this was I don't have all the quotes here, but anyone that's listening to this has heard this interview before. They know everything that happened with it. Did not paint a good picture of Tony Khan and AEW really at all. And has somewhat told the story of All Out without going into, every single detail, which I was thinking about the other day, like, I one of these days I want the whole story. I want it. As a human being and someone that pays attention to this stuff, I just want to know. And I think all of us, what happened there that night in Chicago? We just all want to know. So this led to, of course, as you might imagine, this long interview and all the comments he made, all types of fallout. Tony Schiavone was asked about his comments, saying, "I don't give a shit." Tony Schiavone's podcast character or real life character and what he portrays on TV and are so completely different. One is such a great host and such a professional, all this stuff. And then he goes like, and I don't watch a ton of these, but he goes and shows like Conrad Thompson stuff. And he just like swears and it just seems so angry and bitter at times. And it will just tell you. And it's like, I mean, I can relate, but he just comes off as very much like, I don't give a shit, he just doesn't. He doesn't give an inch. And it's quite something. Eddie Kingston said he's more concerned release for AEW talent than CM Punk comments. And then we learned, I think it was a week after, right in the same month, obviously, AEW announced that they were going to air the footage of the CM Punk. They didn't say CM Punk, but the backstage altercation from All In, which of course was CM Punk and Jack Perry, which no one ever seen. And of course, all of us in the wrestling landscape are like, you are? Like, what happened? And all of a sudden, is this really going to put CM Punk in his place? Is this going to make him look like the bag? I think there has to be a reason you're showing this, right? And leading in this, of course, there was a big push for this. Tony Khan said the Young Bucks have a good reason to air the All In backstage footage. And he said Tony Khan said it was the right time place to air it. And so it aired, and it was no audio, and literally it was security camera footage. And we saw up overhead and CM Punk coming back, and really exactly how he actually described it on the MMA Hour, and exactly basically how he described it almost to a T. And he left out, he said he didn't swing up, he didn't throw a punch. He did. You can see it. I think a lot of people are trying to hang on to that as like, oh, see, he's not telling the truth. But like, it was just, and you could see, as I'm describing this with my hands, even though we're not on a video. Where you see that where Tony Khan's desk is, where the monitors and like the lunging thing, that was the whole thing, CM Punk lunging him. And there was definitely a move he made toward that area, no doubt about it. Whether, Tony Khan was scared for his life. I mean, there was 40 people around, including Samoa Joe and all these other very large wrestlers and backstage staff. And so it was fascinating to watch, but it just didn't have the oomph to it, you know what I mean? That I thought. Let's start there. Your thought on the interview, and we'll also get to the Adam Copeland rah-rah speech in a minute afterward. The Punk interview, and then kind of just the deciding to air the all-in footage. The floor is yours.
I was surprised at how much WWE wrestlers were talking about AEW in the build to WrestleMania. That was something that struck me as an interesting media strategy, but nonetheless, because Cody talked about it too when he didn't he go on Helwani as well, and Cody was it
Yes.
Hel and
Yep.
Cody talked about AEW as well, so there was a lot of AEW talk. None of this should surprise anyone that, you know, CM Punk has an opportunity to talk about it, and he does. I found the interview that he had given, I think it was Sports Illustrated. He had given a written interview with Sports Illustrated where he was basically burying Hangman Page, right?
Yep.
I thought that was a more damning situation. And Punk was still working for the company at that point, if I'm not mistaken, right? So, like, to me, that I thought was, you know, more offensive, but not in the sense like my sensibilities are offensive, but more like, detrimental than what he did here. This is a guy airing grievances. Everyone wanted to hear talk about it. So, you know, like, it is what it is, but, you know, I had already reached a saturation point, and I'm pretty sure you too, Josh, a lot of us who cover this stuff were, where it's like, are we still talking about this again? Like, are we still doing this? And I think that's one of the reasons why, like, you know, it came across as really weird during that this is happening during the build to WrestleMania. I'm like, y'all are about to have the biggest show of the year. Why are we even covering this? There's like, I understand why, don't get me wrong, but, you know, we also could have just like brushed it over and say, oh, I wish them good luck, but no, it's CM Punk, so we know it's going to go a little deeper. And then, well, the footage is 100% a retaliation to that, right? And I think we agree with that. It's 100% a retaliation. You know, I thought that it was going to be this. I thought it was going to be a really bad thing for AEW to do. Like, I thought it was going to be something that was just going to have no upside, right? But I think ultimately one guy benefited from this, and I do think Jack Perry for a while benefited from it. I don't think it's necessarily the case anymore, but I think he did. It did help boost a creative persona for him, and you know, I think he ultimately ended up being a winner. But I don't think the footage. Let me back up a little bit. I think 2023 was a terrible year for AEW. For a lot of reasons, and for creative reasons, but also all of this specter as well, all of the things with Punk and the infighting, it was just a terrible year, and I felt like they had lost a lot of fans, a lot of people who were there from the start. I think all of this nonsense drove a lot of people away. There were some creative decisions in there as well, but I think like this was a perfect storm of nonsense to just that helped push people away who are just like fed up of hearing about all of this all the time. And I think that bringing all of this back, oh, we're going to air the footage when we all felt like it was going to be behind us, to the degree it could be behind us, right? Because it is going to be scrutinized for years. It's the next Montreal screw job, right? We're going to be talking about this. There's going to be anniversaries in 5 years, in 10 years. Yep. You know, whoever's doing shoot podcasts at the time, they're going to have a blast doing this, right? You know, so we felt that this was all behind us. And I think it created just a sense of discomfort, of unease, where we're like, why are we revisiting this again? Why is all of this being brought up? And could AEW have taken the high road and just like not say a word and just move on from this? Absolutely, they could have. Has this quelled the discussion around what actually happened backstage? Yes. We don't have any doubts as to what happened, you know, because CM Punk, just like any professional wrestler, is a professional liar. He goes on Helwani, he can tell whatever side of the story he wants. turns out that he was spot on with the video. But now that we saw the video, we know that everyone was corroborating everyone, you know, that it corroborated CM Punk's story. Everything made sense. We don't have to argue or say, well, we don't have to have these scenarios develop in our minds, like what happened when the Young Bucks entered CM Punk's locker room,
right,
where we're still, there's a lot of fantasy land that still exists there. Now this is just like quelled and done. And I, you know, it's just, I think it helped demonstrate just how exhausted pro wrestling fans were at the time of all it in regards to all the AEW CM Punk brawl out stuff. I think everyone was so done with it.
I agree.
The fact that it came back, it was just, you know, opening up the sore again.
Yeah. Especially because there's so much that we, for that whole, from September 2023 to this point, you know, there, so much we just didn't know. And they're just, and that I think, as you mentioned, kind of a bad year for AEW. It didn't help that there was just nobody was talking about it. And yeah, you're used to so many of these big stories, you'll, it doesn't take too long before things are out there and you hear about NDAs and there, but for so long it was just silence. And I think that silence really, really not killed them, but it definitely inflicted a lot of undue damage. If they just come to say, just to get it all out, you know, or whatever mm-hmm. you want to get out there and let's move on with it. But just the silence. And again, the Young Bucks eventually coming back and them not really, it is, again, it was just this whole, like this pall over everything. And Punk was the first one to actually somewhat talk about it. And Tony Khan, his refusal to even acknowledge it and talk about it in interviews and kind of play it off and go promoter mode. And him not, he would have been, I think, much better off to also do an interview or maybe the week after or something like that, say, that's his side, this is my side. And really take some of that narrative back and say, okay, you choose who to believe. You're going to choose who you believe anyway, but at least your story's on the record. So for your side, as much as that grosses me out to say it, because I hate the sides thing, but it's reality. You're able to at least say, okay, we're not hiding behind it. We're going to get this out there instead. This happens. And it's just a weird time frame for sure. And then Adam Copeland, Edge, gave this after the interview, the Wednesday after, gave this mm-hmm. very, you know, rally behind AEW speech, so to speak, and talk about all this negative BS, never mentioning Punk by name, but essentially this, rally for AEW type moment. And it was mixed with, you know, some reviews. He talked about afterwards why he did it and so on. Tony Khan later talking about CM Punk's claims about not having surgery things covered. And talk about the media interview. It's one thing to actually address. He's like, well, you know, we covered those things, but certainly if for some reason we didn't, you know, we'll reimburse or whatever. I'm so curious if you actually see CM Punk actually submitted the receipts or something like that. Yeah. After, you know, normal folk like I do when it comes to that, or like we do when that stuff happens. And Kenny Omega actually addressed the CM Punk, or at least said there's no issue between him and I, which basically put a giant yellow circle around, well, it's the Bucks and him that have an issue. And that's what the whole central point of all this seemed to be, is there was just we never wanted him here to begin with, and he's there, and there was never an intermediary that runs the company, it runs every single thing, a very well-paid guy saying, let's figure this out for the better of everyone and the company. And it never happened, and it blew up. They lost a ton of money as a result, and they had to deal with all this bullshit.
Yep. Yeah, no, that, look, the Eddie Kingston promo, right? Like you said it, right? Nobody really wanted him there. That was Eddie Kingston's infamous promo when they did that little, mm-hmm. that little short feud, right? Nobody wants you here. Nobody wanted you here. Something to that effect, right?
Yeah.
Tells him straight up in his face. And you can tell in CM Punk's eyes that, you know, okay, there's stuff going on here. You can tell, like, it's not just, we're not brushing stuff off, you know. You know, the fallout to all of this is really a shame. And again, this is another podcast into discussing how all of this could have been avoided. But a lot of blame has to go to Tony Khan, ultimately, where, you know, he you know, he should have stepped up. He should have got people in the room, and he should have locked the door and, you know, screamed through the seam of the door. No one's coming out until you guys get along, you know, kind of thing. And there's a lot of stuff here that should have never reached the levels it did had he taken more of a leadership role.
Yeah. You
know, splitting rosters onto, but sequestering CM Punk onto Collision was never going to work. And it didn't, because the minute the rosters mix up again, CM Punk starts fighting guys. You know, it's like it was never going to work, and it's a shame, because this is the company, this is ultimately the company that brought CM Punk back. Like, Tony Khan brought CM Punk back to wrestling. You know,
yep.
And it's absolutely a shame that it ends like this. On a sour note, on one that, you know, you never say never in pro wrestling, but Josh, I mean, come on, is CM Punk ever going to go back to AEW? Like, you know,
it's hard to imagine. Yeah,
right. I mean, the locker room will mutiny. Right? Like, there's no. I think this is one of the, like, if I were a betting man, I'd bet on him staying away forever at this point. And it's honestly, it's a real crying shame that this is where we're at.
Yep. Certainly is. I mean, he's going to run NXT one day, right? I mean, that's the plan. Yeah.
He's playing nice.
Paul Levesque's going to be like, you know, Sean, maybe just take a early retirement. I got this, this young fellow from Chicago that wants to come in and run
exactly.
Things.
Yeah, exactly. He's doing the bracelet angles, you know, he's gritting his teeth because he's like, eventually one day I'm running the training program.
Yeah. 0.0% chance that ever happens. There's no way that happens. Zero chance. But of course, you know, Triple H saying people change right after 10 years. So who knows, you know, if he can change, the old Rocky quote, if he can change, I can change, everyone can change, something like that. Speaking of Tony Khan, this I think was led to a real dud. When this angle happened, the Elite attacking Tony Khan on the Dynamite after AEW Dynasty, Shad Khan made his on-screen debut. Of course, this happened at the end of the show. And when this whole thing happened, I thought, okay, this is interesting. Like, this is like, Tony Khan is rarely on screen. He's mentioned, but for big announcements and things like that.
Right.
He's not a physically imposing figure by any case. And he actually got, you know, physically taken down and, you know, at the little comical and how things kind of work. He got punched in the gut and immediately fell backwards. And, you know, but that's wrestling for you. But took a Meltzer driver and so on. And I, you know, he wore the head and neck brace. He sold it, you know, went old school, selling it during the NFL draft. He was not traveling to AEW TV because he was the neck injury, and eventually the neck brace was auctioned off for charity, which, you know, all's well that ends well in that respect. But in terms of the angle, you know, the Bucks kind of using their EVP thing, I thought when this started, okay, they got something here where it's this, not a takeover per sense of, like, you know, the invasion type stuff, but kind of an internal takeover of, like, we're EVPs and we're gonna run this stuff for a while. And they leaned into it, and then they just kind of just backed out of it, and eventually it just all disappeared. The whole angle, they had the blood and guts match, which it was kind of just forced, and I think that was kind of the official end of it. But it just, they initially committed to it, and then they just backed away from it. And I thought this could have been, I don't want to say a transformative thing, but it could have been something really good. And they just didn't go for it. And I'm so curious as to why they didn't happen. They wasted this. And it just, again, we're talking about this in December 2nd. It lasted what, 3-4 months, if that, and then that was it.
I liked how this took off. I liked how, like, I thought it was fun, because I'm a big fan of chaos in pro wrestling.
Yes.
You know, like, I was watching the Crush Gals versus Crane Yu and Dump Matsumoto earlier today. I just pulled it up for fun. They're the two out of three falls match for the WWE tag titles. And it's, It's just complete chaos at the end, and I'm giggling like a schoolgirl. I love it so much. So I like the chaos in pro wrestling. So I really like the angle when they did it. But when it turned into an authority figure angle, then the volume got brought down to three. Like I overall, Josh, in the history of pro wrestling, authority angles never really work. They're kind of dumb, and they always end up having a bunch of discrepancies and illogical moments, right? Here's the most illogical moment that is still persisting in AEW today. Christopher Daniels was made interim EVP, right? When Tony Khan was gone, right? So that there would still be someone there to oppose the Bucks. But then Tony Khan returns one night. What was it, like driving Darby Allin back, I think?
Yes,
He
you're right.
drove him back. So then, oh, Tony Khan is back. And yet Christopher Daniels was still in the role, was still doing the interim EVP thing. But you're like, Tony's back. Go away. Like, why are you still here? Why are you still calling shots? None of this makes sense. And it gets nonsensical to the point that a couple of weeks ago, when the Bucks are hitting the bricks because the Death Riders are after them, right? Remember that? They were shredding documents, and then they were taking a powder, getting to their cars as quickly
Working
as
from home,
possible,
yes,
working from home. Well, who confronts them? It's Christopher Daniels. Christopher Daniels saying, "Why are you guys leaving? You got to stay and fight. You're supposed to be enemies." Christopher Daniels, you were put in this position because the Bucks were abusing their authority, and you're supposed to be the voice of reason. Shouldn't you be happy that the Bucks are leaving? Like, see, like none of this ends up making sense. So I was done with this angle for a while, which was a shame because I love the Jacksons when they're heels. The Jacksons as heels, as petulant little bastards, I love them. And this was the perfect role for them. But it just turned into another one of these angles where it's just like where authority figures just don't work out and things get all jumbled up and illogical. And yeah, it like you said, it just turned into a complete dud.
AEW Dynasty, the first ever one, happened during the month. Swerve Strickland winning the AEW World title for the very first time by defeating Samoa Joe. Long overdue and well earned. I was concerned going for a while. It's kind of like, when are they finally going to get behind this guy for good? And they really have since then. He's earned it. He's earned it. I think anyone early on that saw he just had something different. And he certainly, I think he is true pillar for them for sure. Will Ospreay defeating Brian Danielson, that was obviously the most anticipated match on that show by far. Chris Jericho won the FTW title on the show. Adam Cole rose out of a wheelchair for the first time, of course, playing it up with the ankle surgery and things like that. Of course, he's still a long way away from returning to the ring. Young Bucks won the tag team titles after Jack Perry made his return, interfered, pushing Dax Harwood off the ladder. He ended up getting a concussion on that spot. And then the unified trios champions were crowned at Dynasty as well. That would certainly change quite a bit because they just can't help it. And then just one of these days now we're splitting up the titles and so on. But yeah, overall, noteworthy, for the most part, AEW, pay-per-views are. This was kind of the ones, if I remember right, was coming out of it. It just didn't seem like it was had that same kind of feeling as we get as some of these as we had. Obviously, Revolution was a
An
pay-per-view,
all-timer.
an all-timer. But usually, after these pay-per-views, there's something where just like that was long, but it was really worth it. This one had its moments, but overall didn't have that. How I remember, didn't really have that kind of that same gravitas.
I liked it. I liked it more than Double or Nothing, which
Yes.
would be the next month. I like this one more than Double or Nothing, but obviously, yeah, I mean, if you're comparing it to Revolution, then everything stinks. But no, like I thought it was pretty good. Like, like you said though, like the show was carried by Ospreay and Danielson, which is just an absolutely phenomenal match. And Swerve winning was great. And I think a lot of people were worried about what was going to happen next because AEW's follow-up isn't necessarily their strong suit. What I really liked out of this is that, you know, I think it ended up being the good moment to pull the trigger, excuse me, on Swerve. You can see it today. And he's a guy who he grew into the role. Like, he had to have the title around him to grow into developing that feeling, that aura, which I'm starting to dislike the use of the word aura now. It's like everyone uses it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's sort of like its meaning is sort of empty now. But nonetheless, like, that championship aura that you're supposed to have, I think he grew with it over the few months that he was champion. Now he just absolutely feels like a top guy in the company. He raised his stock. You know, it's one of these circumstances where the title made the man, I think. But he obviously put the work into it to make, you know, to make his character feel big and special. So the follow through was really, really good. It was a good moment to pull the trigger on Swerve, and
and he was active, and I think that's
a
big
active.
That's a big thing, you know. I think he didn't have the, you know, the MJF thing. Part of it was he wasn't as active, but he also had character was really cemented. Swerve, yeah, you're right, needed this, and he wasn't one of these guys like, well, now I'm going to do the same schedule. He was working a lot and against different opponents, which I think helped quite a bit too. Let's go through this first chunk of AEW stuff. AEW hired a new senior marketing director of live events. Notable, again, as they would try to recapture the feeling, and obviously would go through their attendance woes throughout the year, which we'll talk about. Will Ospreay set a challenge for the international title? Mercedes Moné versus Willow Nightingale TBS title match set at for Double or Nothing. Of course, that'd be Mercedes Moné's in-ring debut for the company. AEW launched a new gaming podcast with Adam Cole and Evil Uno. Company no longer available for in Mexico on Televisa Univision's VIX platform. That would eventually change with some other, another provider they would go to, but that was later on. The company said, more Tony Khan quotes, said that collaborating with WWE would depend on the circumstance. Of course, that's always. Said that WWE is like the Harvey Weinstein of pro wrestling. People said, okay. And then he said later on, those controversial anti-WWE comments got tons of coverage for AEW. Said he spent more than I planned to going in this year in both AEW and Ring of Honor. And he said AEW and WWE's mutual hate is a natural resource that powers the industry. That's sure. One way of putting it. That's one way of putting it. Really good. Ortiz underwent successful pec surgery because young veterans made their AEW debut in Collision. I assume they're under some kind of contract. They have been at AEW like twice, maybe three times, some on Ring of Honor, but not really like kind of the full, like the full thing of kind of where they're at. Adam Copeland said he, at this point, said he had a year and a half left in the ring, give or take. Of course, he'd be out for the majority of 2024 after Double or Nothing. Coming for the first time, announced their entire pay-per-view schedule for the rest of the year. Held their 10th annual or 10th Battle of the Belts events. I don't think anyone's going to miss those starting in 2025. Rio in the process of renewing her visa. Forbidden Door was initially rumored to be happening at Arthur Ashe Stadium. That was not the case. That would be, of course, a grand slam as always. Darby Allin recovering after being hit by a bus. That's just buried in the headlines because it seems to happen all the time with Darby Allin. The Blade out of action with lower back injury. He's been out for the duration of 2024. Mark Briscoe, one of the good guys, won the Ring of Honor world title at Supercard of Honor. And Billy Starks won the inaugural women's TV title as well. Paul Walter Hauser appeared as one of the boys. Of course, the boys had got fired in March for the whole travel debacle. But Hauser, made his appearance. Of course, this is his first appearance since Jeff Jarrett stole his Golden Globe Award, if you remember. I think that was 2022 or 2023. And then Black Tarus debuted under his new name, which is the Beast Mortos. Brandi Rhodes gave an interview leading into Mania Week on AEW saying, what I feared with that company I was seeing. You can imagine the responses to that comment on Twitter, because not a lot of people seem to care for Brandi Rhodes for whatever reason. Chris Jericho filed for three new trademarks, including the Learning Tree, which that would come to fruition and sprout, so to speak, in 2024.
Oh, well played. Well played.
Yes. Holding that one in the back pocket. Horror film Dark Match set to premiere later on in the year. Yuka Sakazaki suffered a legitimate leg injury in a Rampage match, and Powerhouse Hobbs suffered an injury during a match with John Moxley. If I remember right, it was an IWGP world title match on Dynamite, and ended up essentially blowing out his ACL. And then Julia Hart may need surgery. She did need surgery on her shoulder, and that would keep her out for quite some time. And she's going to be coming back rather soon. Thoughts about any of that?
Let's see. I don't think Tony Khan is what. Okay. I've worked with WWE, depending on the circumstance, leaves it very open, right? As to what, you know, you'd need the appropriate circumstance and everything coming together. But like Tony Khan in 2019, 2020, let's say he says, yeah, I'd be open to working with WWE or whatever, you know, so you'd kind of be like, sure. Yeah. I would see him at least having an inkling, thinking to himself, saying, yeah, this would probably be a good idea. But with everything that's happened since, and especially, you know, with him occasionally dropping on, you know, on Twitter and in interviews, you know, oh, well, you know, that they mess with the contracts, you know?
Right, contract tampering, yeah.
You know, well, it's like, I am convinced at this point there is no way AEW would work with WWE. You know, absolutely no way. Wasn't there a thing where, I might need misremembering, so I won't go down the path. But I cannot see it happening anymore.
Is a better chance of CM Punk taking over NXT?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a better, that actually is a lot more, it makes a lot more sense. It's a lot more plausible because, you know, you see it just in the way that he's handling contracts right now, certain guys whose contracts are up and that he's benching, essentially. He's letting the contracts run out. Something that a lot of people deplored that WWE would do back in the day. Now Tony Khan is doing it. And why is he doing it? Well, because he doesn't want to send guys over to WWE. They're in a talent war right now. It's just as simple as that. Maybe WWE hanging on to Pac for 18 months while there was no other competition, while there was no one else in North America, instead of just releasing him and having him go, you know, work Dragon Gate. Maybe that's a little more egregious where you're like, why are you holding on to the contract here? Now it's like Tony is holding on to these contracts because he just doesn't want to let the talent go. And you can understand that. Like they're in a talent war. Is it, can we swear a bit on your
part? Of course. Yeah. Let's do it.
Is it shitty for the talent? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Ray Phoenix is going to be stuck doing nothing right into 2025, right? So yeah, it's a bullshit thing to do. But as the owner of a promotion, what are you going to do? You're going to send them ready-made talent? You're going to send them talent that you've been promoting and boosting? And no, you're going to have them sit back, and you're going to send them. You're going to send them when you're good and ready for them to be released, right? I mean, there's so much that's happened within the last 3 to 4 years in this environment that I completely understand. Doesn't mean I necessarily agree, but I understand why Tony has these habits developing and how he reacts to WWE now. Like it's just a crazy situation now. It's very, very different.
Let's go through, speaking of talent and contracts and so on, let's go to the rest of the month. We had AEW releases, which you don't really see that often when it comes to any type of mass release. I think it's about six or seven, eight or so. Stu Grayson, Parker Boudreau were among some of the releases. Anthony Henry, one of those, and saying he wasn't sure if he'll continue wrestling after his release. And eventually he was rehired. Of course, he had a broken jaw at this point. And I mentioned the boys got fired in March. It was actually this month. The boys actually were part of these releases as well. It's just a statement on their release. Basically, this whole thing about travel, got rebooked to an airport that was 3 hours away and blah, blah, blah. And Tony Khan said, well, they missed shows. And he said he was not moved by the boys' statement, when a rare kind of honest answer from old TK. Camille reportedly signed, actually did sign a contract with AEW. That could have happened as early as February, I guess. That's when she initially dropped something on Twitter and then deleted it and said, or said she was talking about, joking about signing something. It was like, you're clearly not, just say you meant. Yeah, like we all kind of knew what the deal was. Tony Khan responded to a comment Goldberg made in about it being too goofy or whatever he said about AEW. That was in March's episode, saying that Goldberg wanted to work in AEW. His friend Goldberg, as you remember, they're mutual friends for a long time. I don't know if you have any mutual friends that just make fun of your company or anything like that, you know, in public. Yeah, I don't know what type of friendship. That type is Roosh made his return after injury on AEW Collision. Ray Phoenix returned to the ring. Just talking about him, made his return ring after a long absence due to injury. Miro gave an injury update and said he'd been essentially injured for a while. And again, we'll never see him in AEW again. That would be a big surprise, much like CM Punk taking over NXT or AEW and WWE working together. And put over Tony Khan saying, it was great to work with all this stuff, buttering up the boss because he was going to ask for his release in a couple months. That still has not happened yet. Shawn Michaels asked about AEW, said there's so much talent in the company. Dax Harwood, again, suffered a concussion. Dynasty was feeling much better, wasn't on the show for too long. AEW Dynamite had this random run of audio issues during their broadcast. And
oh, God. That was in April? Oh, God, yeah.
At least in April, yeah. It would happen. Yeah, and address those. And so, all stuff that just didn't seem to make any sense. TBS is doing this new feed or blah, blah, blah. Or so, I don't know, just didn't make any sense. New Ring of Honor World Champion Mark Briscoe announced the birth of yet another child to the family. I think he's got about 12 or 13 at some point, or at this point, rather. This is something. Will Ospreay decided to fire back at Triple H in a promo on Dynamite. Triple H is on the Pat McAfee show and didn't reference Will directly, but kind of indirectly, saying that basically guys that wanted to be there and some sort of like, I can't remember the exact quotes, but allusion to like the schedule and all these things and guys really want to get in the grind and all this stuff. Essentially alluding that Will Ospreay wasn't going to grind or anything like this. So Will Ospreay was pissed and he mentioned, didn't mention him directly, but essentially we all knew who he was talking about. And later on said he was done mentioning when AEW or saying WWE and wanted to focus on AEW instead. That was a fun moment there. Nikki Bella said she considered joining AEW after seeing Mercedes Moné's debut. Tony Khan said they would love to have her anytime. That would not happen. I just thought that was just funny because, she could just walk in the door and immediately feel like she could get a job. You know what I mean? I guess she probably could, Bryan Danielson, but just kind of like, oh yeah, I can go anywhere I want or just, I can go to this company. And I don't know. I always kind of find those things funny, especially like when athletes say, oh yeah, I'm really interested in going to WWE. You know, just like pro wrestling is always the junk drawer for people that don't want like do other things. They're like,
yeah,
I'll just go do that and they'll take me. It just drives me crazy. Tony Schiavone said his Dynamite reaction to the Young Bucks was to put more heat on them. Remember, he was at like the broadcast. He was at the broadcast booth, and he just looked really annoyed with. I think this might have been leading into the All In footage. And you remember,
yes.
He was kind of saying,
yes.
So I should have put it in that section. But he's kind of like going like this, and just he didn't seem that thrilled. People are like, oh, he hates this. He hates it so bad. And then, he was asked about it. He said it was put more heat on the Bucks and in only the way that Tony Schiavone could. And there was a report that Alex Shelley and Chris Sabre were finalizing a deal with AEW. That report turned out to be not true. Not true. And again, as I mentioned, I should rearrange these. Goldberg said he was not interested in signing with AEW. Said the product is too cheesy. Again, that led Tony Khan to respond to that. I talked about Swerve Strickland. Ruby Soho and Angela Parker announced they were pregnant and at Rampage taping. Of course, that eventually spilled over in the actual on-screen as well. The Oklahoma Athletic Commission issued a warning to AEW over Nyla Rose competing on an event they did there because she's transgender. And this ended up being a thing that still is not resolved as of this point. And then former WWE commentator Carlos Cabrera signed with the company to head up their Spanish language team. Thoughts about any of that?
Carlos Cabrera being brought in is tremendous. Like, he's a voice of pro wrestling for the Mexican market. Like, everyone knows who he is. He's like Jim Ross, right? It's so like, if you want to get into the Spanish market and do your thing and get people tuning in, well, you go in with a super familiar voice, right? And it's the JR strategy at the same time all over again. I was really happy. When well, you know, as happy as me, a non-Spanish speaker, can be. But, you know, I was still excited that it's like, okay, well, they're serious about making inroads into Mexico.
Sure.
That's, you know, so that's basically what I meant. Bill Goldberg, you know, essentially what this was, right? I mean, I think it's fairly easy to speculate. He sees Sting getting all this, this great, final run, you know, doing the retirement gimmick, and Bill's in his, you know, he's been trying to get someone to finance his retirement match for a while now,
sure,
you know? And he's sitting in his corner and he's like, what more could I siphon off of the pro wrestling world without giving anything back? Oh, why don't I reach out to Tony Khan and see if he wouldn't be interested? And Tony's like, well, yeah, I mean, sure, I guess. And he's like, I don't know what Tony's real thoughts are about Bill Goldberg, but if Tony is the board poster that he says he is and that his reputation says he is, I'm pretty sure he really doesn't care about Bill Goldberg. I'm pretty sure he's like, yeah, no, he had a great 18 months in WCW, you know, and whatever. But after that, the man really falls off, you know? So it's like, I'm fine. Look, Bill's back in the good graces with WWE, and he's going to get his nice little retirement match, and he'll make me super happy, and he'll be able to take some more stuff out of the pro wrestling business without putting anyone over. That's just congratulations, Bill, a guy who just took and took and took and took, never gave back to the business. One more time, Josh, right. Let's do it one more time.
That's right. Let's go through the month of TNA real quick. Broken Matt Hardy made his return at Rebellion. Said he's still a free agent. Laredo Kid won a digital media title. Sean Merriman, former NFL player, made an appearance. He's had this dalliance with pro wrestling for years, but never really committed. And I think this is his only appearance, so that would continue. Sammy Callahan made his return after a short run as a free agent. Mike Santana made his surprise return to the company as a single star, of course, at this point at Rebellion as well. Of course, he was part of LAX forever in some of the dark days, I guess, of TNA, and people weren't really watching the Russo years and all that. Against All Odds was announced for June in Cicero, Illinois, hotbed for MLW, part of their run there. Yeah. Jonathan Gresham signed a new contract with the company. Five matches are announced for Under Siege, which is going to come up. Steve Macklin officially re-signed a contract, and then they announced a date and location for Slammiversary, July in Montreal, not too far away from you. Thoughts about any of TNA's month? It is okay to say no.
Yeah, no. Mike Santana. How about that? Mike Santana going back. Because I really dropped off TNA after Slammiversary after that. I really haven't been keeping up. But I think Mike Santana going to TNA has been good. I think he's going in there and he's literally working his ass off. This is a guy who feels he has something to prove, right? He wants to prove people wrong, and he's working really, really hard. And I appreciate the level of energy and seriousness he brings to the TNA outfit. I've been, from what I saw, I enjoyed his work, but, like, you know, post Slammiversary, I can't really speak on it, unfortunately.
All right, let's go to a topic you know well, Japan. A lot of New Japan stuff here. I'll rip through all this and kick it over to you for thoughts on this. I'm not a big New Japan watcher. I kind of understand what's going on with the product, of course, but yeah, not big. It's too much U.S. wrestling to watch, huh? The company revealed their schedule for the G1 Climax, the 34th edition of that. They revealed their Best of Super Juniors lineup, the 31st edition of that. Yo suffered a shoulder injury in his Sakura Genesis title match. He's eventually pulled from the Best of Super Juniors tournament. Yui Uemura won the King of Pro Wrestling title. Julia made a surprise Noah appearance on her first day of free agency. I should have led with this. John Moxley winning the IWGP World title at Windy City Riot. And his first title defense was set up at Wrestling Dontaku and Narita against Ren Narita, rather. And then another title match was made official for Resurgence against Shota Umino. Sonata was pulled from New Japan events and was undergoing a medical appraisal, as they called it. The company issued an apology for losing. This feels like 2003 headline. They issued an apology for losing a USB drive. A USB drive in 2024 with fan club members' personal info on it. Toni Storm made a surprise appearance for Stardom during WrestleMania weekend, of course, in Philadelphia. Mustafa Ali was set for a strong resurgence. The company announced a return to Washington, D.C. for Capital Collision. They crowned new never six-man tag team champions Ishii, Yoshihashi, and Hirooki Goto. Jordynne Grace appeared via video at a Sendai Girls show and issue a challenge that would lead to her returning or coming to the promotion, rather. Rossy Ogawa officially announced the launch of Marigold, which would feature Julia, of course, launching that before she would head over to WWE land, and led Kenny Omega saying in one of his video game or his video chats, Twitch chats, I guess they were, saying that people someday know the truth about Rossy Ogawa. Not a fan. And I remember this was a Saturday morning. I transcribed this. My daughter's at gymnastics and there's a lot of just downtime. So I have my laptop just doing stuff. And I was listening to this video and I'm like, wow, this guy does not like Rossy
He
Ogawa
really doesn't.
one bit. And we still don't really know the truth, I guess, but we'll see if that comes out at some point. Takuchi, rather, pulled from New Japan shows due to bicycle accident injuries. Stardom, set to become a fully owned subsidiary of New Japan in June. Noah's Jake Lee attacked Naito at a Road to Dantaku event. And then, as I mentioned before, actually, we'll end with that because I already talked about resurgence and all that. Thoughts about any of that? The month in
Oh,
Japan.
there's a lot of stuff. I'm going to try and keep it brief. First of all, the USB debacle was hilarious, and it shows you in what state New Japan is technologically. Their website ran into some issues, like was it late last year or something like that, and they still haven't fixed it. NJPW 1972, it's still a mess. It's
Yeah.
still like Chris Charlton is putting up articles on a medium.com
Yes, they're right, yeah.
blog, because because the website is in complete shambles. It was the schedule for the G1 this year was just bonkers to try and figure out on the first when it was first released, and they kind of fixed it, but anyway, the USB drive, like with private information on the fan club members, that's just like I don't even like that just shows you what kind of technological setup they have. Yo suffering the injury was kind of a bummer because a lot of people he was a lot of people's pick for winning the Super Juniors this year. Everyone kind of thought Yo was gonna do it this year. But unfortunately didn't pull it off, so that's a shame. John Moxley had arguably one of the worst IWGP World Title reigns in the history of the company. No one is impressed with it. I don't think anyone in America is impressed with it. I would argue North American New Japan fans are not impressed with it either. And from what I understand from people who follow it really, really closely and can speak Japanese, the Japanese fans aren't didn't think it was all that great either, and actually were kind of it sparked off the whole debate as to whether or not New Japan was a feeding system for AEW, where it's like, okay, so we're sending you our Okada, we're sending you our Osprey, and now you're getting our title, so it started off a really big discussion in Puro circles, which was actually some very interesting debate. It wasn't just like Angry Man discourse. It was actually really interesting. But John Moxley's reign as IWGP World Champion was not good, and you could tell that he was not happy about it. He was not happy with the way it was handled. I heard some things that showed some displeasure with how stuff went down. But look, you're lining up defenses against Ren Narita. That's a rough one. You do a powerhouse Hobbs defense on a random Dynamite. That's something that irked a lot of New Japan fans, is that the title is held in reverence. You just don't drop, you don't American book a world championship title like that in New Japan. it's the main event of a show. There's a proper build. It's at the end of a tour. Like, it's a big deal. Now it's just like, it's Wednesday night. We're starting off with Powerhouse Hobbs. Wow. Okay. That made a lot of people irate. Mm. And the question, and, you know, since Japan pays a lot more attention to this kind of stuff, well, what did Powerhouse Hobbs do to warrant a world championship shot? You know, there's a lot of stuff that really rubbed people the wrong way on a lot of levels. It was not a successful or well-perceived title run. It was, it actually showed a lot of warts. And I think we'll keep it. Oh, Stardom becoming a full subsidiary of New Japan, just very quickly. A lot of Joshi fans upset about that, because the fear that they had was for years, especially once Bushiroad bought them, but for years was that Stardom was going to become New Japan's women's division, whereas Stardom is its own promotion, it's its own thing. It shouldn't be the women's division for another company. And now, you know, we're moving closer and closer to that. There's an IWGP women's title, which has never happened before. There's not really a division in New Japan for women. So who's the talent pool for that? Well, it's Stardom. So, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty and worry here. And the fact that it's become a subsidiary of New Japan now, it's not quelling any fears.
Interesting. That's good perspective. Yeah, that's that very interesting perspective about the IWGP world title. I hadn't really thought of that before, because again, I'm not, like I said, I know the promotion, but I don't really watch that much of it. So it's we kind of see it as the, or I say we, I see it as a, you know, they're a partner of AEW, and it's just part of this kind of interchange thing. And yeah, titles get defended on TV all the time. I didn't really think, you know, for a fan base like them, like New Japan fans, that they're like, wait a minute, this is supposed to mean something. It's different. And just to see as a, it's almost like a subsidiary of New Japan's becoming a subsidiary of AEW, I can understand how that might be an arresting thought for some of those fans.
Yeah, the idea was that it wasn't treated with the reverence that it should be. You know, it's exactly as if, you know, let's say in a fantasy land, New Japan books the Universal title with Cody Rhodes, but, you know, it's like fourth from the top and he's fighting, you know, Yujiro Takahashi, right? The mm-hmm. Tokyo Pimp. I don't know if you're familiar with his work. But I mean, like, that's the kind WWE fans would be in an uproar, you know, and rightfully so, because Yujiro stinks and the Universal title, well, should be held with more reverence than being defended forth from the top kind of thing. Right.
Yeah. If that match happened, I swear there's a good section of WWE fans that would be all caps, like, this is fire, and they should, you know, they would find their ways to make it like
good point.
Yeah, exactly. You know how that works. All right, let's go to the junk drawer. This is the best of everything else that didn't fit above in all the other categories. The aforementioned John Moxley versus Josh Barnett headlining Bloodsport Bushido, the company's or the brand's debut in Tokyo. That'll be coming in June. Billy Corgan's Adventures in Carnyland reality series set to premiere this May. That was one of the other series that Billy Corgan was talking about with the whole CW kerfluffle and all that. There was update on CML talent in danger of losing work visas. Essentially, at this point, they were very optimistic that was soon started to happen. Some of these wrestlers could come back and work in the United States, which obviously did happen quite a bit. Mercedes Martinez and Eddie Gilbert were announced, the latest additions announced for the Indie Wrestling Hall of Fame. Of course, it happened during WrestleMania weekend, the ceremony. And this is great. Sabu no-showed the vet, no-showed the whole ceremony, and returned a deposit, and he simply said, I changed my mind. So ECW of Sabu. Vice TV revealed the premiere date for The Rock's Who Killed WCW, brother, in June. Four-part docuseries would begin, because we just can't let go of the Attitude Era. Nick Nemeth won the AAA Mega title at Triple Mania 32 against, of all people, speaking of not being able to let go, Alberto El Patron.
Yeah, Alberto the Boss.
That's
Yeah,
right.
absolutely.
The aforementioned Grizzled Young Veterans announced they were launching their new wrestling promotion. Matt Cardona suffered a torn pec and it was going to have to undergo surgery, miss a lot of indie dates as a result. Mick Foley called off his plan to have one final match. He hoped to have a death match. That would not happen. And then shared a positive health update after suffering concussion. Former sumo wrestler and All Japan star Aki Bono passed away at just 54 years old. And then the Iron Claw, of course, the story of the Von Erichs, are set to begin streaming on Max in May. Thoughts about any of that as we wrap things up?
Did you see the Nick Nemeth Alberto the Boss match?
I can't say as I did. No.
No, it is an infamous match. It is the t-shirt match where Alberto clearly intimidated by the extraordinary physique of Nick Nemeth. Let's get that out of the way. Nick Nemeth looks like $1 million still to this day. Alberto does not quite as defined, I guess, as far as musculature
Oh,
goes.
yes, now this is ringing a bell.
He wore a t-shirt the entire match and would constantly be tugging down on the t-shirt to
Oh,
cover
no.
his little tum-tum.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was a tremendous match. Mercedes Martinez, Eddie Gilbert being included into a Hall of Fame is great. You know, I've been a longtime Mercedes Martinez fan. Got to see her wrestle multiple times, and she will be an unsung stalwart of the scene in the of the 2000s. You know, she was doing this while a lot of women were while most of what most women's wrestling that was being broadcast on television was a different type, let's put it that way. So
Definitely.
that's tremendous. And Eddie Gilbert is, should be in any Hall of Fame at this point. You know, he's a guy. I was listening to Joe Lanza's most recent Jovember to Remember series that he does over on Voices of Wrestling, where he covers the history of ECW. And he was doing the Ultra Class show, which is Eddie Gilbert's last show before leaving ECW. And just the people that this man brought in, because he brought in Paul Heyman into ECW, right? It's Eddie Gilbert. He had an incredible eye for talent, just kept bringing in people that eventually would become the foundations of the ECW that Todd Gordon and Heyman would build that everyone knows about. He brought them all in. He all saw potential in all these people. He's the guy who convinced Shane Douglas to be a heel, because Shane Douglas was like, I can't work heel. It's like, no, you're nuts, brother. You'll be a great heel. I think it's tremendous that I feel like there's more and more Eddie Gilbert love being passed around these days, as opposed to being like considered a footnote in the history of ECW, when there's a lot of credit that should be sent his way. And Bloodsport Bushido show. Josh Barnett never released the attendance for the show. Isn't that interesting?
Huh. Saying he didn't sell that
Huh.
well? Huh.
I mean, I watched parts of the show. You know, Corkin looks pretty empty. You know, they darkened some stuff up. You know, it doesn't seem to be many people, but isn't that odd? The attendance for the show has never been released.
Interesting. Huh.
Interesting.
Maybe a Dark Side of the Ring episode for next season.
What exactly? Work that out.
Mercedes Martinez, the last. When do you think the last time is that she wrestled in a Tony Khan company? Do you have any guess? I have it in front of me.
I think she wrestled, didn't she? I think she wrestled this year in Ring of Honor. I
Yes.
would say March,
Close. April, this very
April.
month.
Okay.
Yeah, in a women's
In
trios
April.
match. Yeah, and another one of these. It doesn't seem like she's coming back. I don't know what the story is because she's wrestling now, and random indie. She wrestled about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and it's kind of one of those situations where she's just not around, and we have no idea.
I think there's a lot more. She's one of those where I think that, Tony could have done a lot more with. Absolutely. She's tremendous. She's always been tremendous.
I remember being excited when they signed her because it felt like she had that NXT run. And it was like that was kind of one of the exciting things about AEW is that they're bringing people where it's like we're going to get to see them have their full promise, right? And especially someone like that. And it just they just never really gave her that full kind of get behind, you know?
Well, do you remember the you know when they did the Casino Battle Royals, right? Do you remember those in AEW?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
they did the first women's one they did.
That was at the All In pre-show, right?
I think. And she look, I think you're right. And she was the Joker. And I she was the Joker. And I was like, oh, that's tremendous. It's fantastic. And then next thing you know, she's hired and she's on NXT. She's hired by WWE and she's on NXT. I'm like, oh, what a fumble. You know, like how did you let that one slip? And then stuff happens and whatnot. And then she gets released and she goes back to AEW. And I'm rubbing my hands together. I'm like, all right, let's go. Let's go. You know? And it just never, it never caught on. It never clicked. I don't know.
Yeah. So yeah, she appeared 2019. She appeared All Out, competing at the Casino Battle Royal, and the match last. She eventually returned, she said, in November, team with Big Swole on an episode of Dark. That's a name from the past. And WWE offered her a contract about 2 weeks afterward and said AEW made no contract offer. So yeah,
that's what she said.
There was an offer. We were in talks. I think WWE, when they gave me the contract, they still let me do AEW, and they offered the contract right after I was revealed the Joker and all this. Yeah. So it was just kind of one thing. They let her do that last AEW Dark match and then that was it. So yeah, weird run. Well, my friend, we did it. Just about 2 hours. I like
not
it.
Bad.
No, not bad at all. Feels like it was, I don't know, 30 minutes. A lot of stuff to talk about. Again, before we let you go, give people a chance where they can follow you on the various social medias you want to promote and read you and listen to you. And the floor is yours once again.
Well, first and foremost, thank you again, Josh, for having me. This was a tremendous blast. It's crazy. All the stuff that happens in just 1 month of pro wrestling. Like, to me, this is like a year, but this is all just happened in April. It was a lot of fun to dig back into. So thank you again for having me on. And if you can stand the tone of my voice, you can join me on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes or on your favorite podcast application to listen to the Mr. Warren Hayes show, which I do every week, where I basically, you know, talk about the week, review wrestling shows and so on and so forth, the usual stuff. But I like to think I do it with a little panache. So hopefully you'll be there. I also do a weekly AEW Dynamite review every Thursday. And on YouTube, I stream quite a bit. And those are very informal, very light stuff where we crack open a window. We run down the Observer and we talk about the news. So that's pretty much it. It's a lot of fun. So if you want to join me over on YouTube, that's probably the best way to do it. YouTube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes.
All right, Warren. Well, thank you so much for stopping by. You'll definitely be back again. It's a great intro to our burgeoning friendship on covering pro wrestling. I think it's a good start and a great intro to our audience here. And yeah, that's it. That's April. And yeah, from now on, we move on to May. I think that's what the calendar says, right? So Warren, thanks again.
Thank you.